Hello, everyone. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be presenting you with a story about the Jones family. The Jones family had land that was taken through eminent domain from the city of Huntsville and gifted to UAH.
All of these proceedings took place in the 1960s to their father, Willie Jones, and started them on a nomadic existence, going from house to house, if you could call many of those places a house. And unfortunately, Willie Jones died in the 1970s, and the children didn't even know that any of this had taken place or that there was anything to inherit.
So what you're going to hear in these stories is their story coming from the descendants of Willie Jones, and full disclosure, their family.
They are. They're Willie Jones was your grandfather.
Exactly. He's my grandfather. Their family. So what you're going to hear is their story from when they found out and all the way up to now, how they're continuing to fight for at least some type of recognition or just even sit down and have a conversation with city officials or even UAH.
We also wanted to shed a light on finding representation and getting and working with advocates, advocacy groups, and what that experience has been like and where that leaves them now and in the future.
So without further ado, we're going to present part one with Mike Jones. And so we hope it gives you guys a little bit more information and you guys can see for yourself the continuance of the fight that they can keep having to go through.
What is up, everybody? I'm Davey.
I'm Misty.
And welcome to another episode of DM Watts. Today, we have our Uncle Mike here. Unless you've been living under a rock, you should have been hearing about the Jones family and the well that they are trying to get back from some land with some land was that was stolen from them. This like I said, this is our uncle. We're going to be interviewing him today. We're going to be interviewing him today. And he's going to be sharing his side of the story. So you guys sit back and just have a listen.
Absolutely.
Okay. So starting off, Uncle Mike, we're going to talk about, we're going to ask you some questions about the early years before everything happened. So like, you know, life as a kid with you, you know, was it like a community well or something like that? Or like, talk a little bit about that.
Life as a kid is kind of rare because we were moving so much, and places that we went wasn't suitable to live. As I remember, as the youngest, when I was only in the second grade, I remember not going to school much as a second grader or first grader should. There was no kindergarten because we couldn't even hardly go to school in the first grade. So basically, those were the hardest years of our lives, being children, trying to go to school, trying to get nourishment, and trying to just live. It was very horrible, I want to say, because times that I can remember walking down a steep hill, getting water out of a creek, and walking miles to find food, maybe from an apple tree or a walnut tree, and bringing it back home, you know, and trying to separate the holes from the pieces of nuts that we had to crack. My childhood was really, really horrible, and it got worse as time went on.
So we talked about, you know, like you said, you know, you remember getting water from the creek and things like that. So what about grandma? Like, was that like she was like her time with you guys? Like she was involved in telling people who wanted to buy to get the well from you guys. No, right?
Right. Well, your grandmother, which is my mother. Mm-hmm. I never got a chance to see her because she, 8 months after I was born, she passed away. And at that point, we were off the property, sharecropping with the person that was supposed to be our friend and a person that mom and dad trust. So 8 months after I was born, she passed away.
So then that, with her passing, and that's what kind of started the whole constantly moving and not having much of a childhood. Is that how I'm reading that?
Absolutely. It seemed like our dad wanted to get as far as away from this sharecropper that he trusted. It was something about that situation that still is a mystery, because, you know, you wouldn't be trying to move a baby
right
here and there in places with non-utilities and places that had endangerment in them, like rat infestations and spiders and snakes. It was something about that these moves that really tormented my father, because I was just a baby when mom died, and the voyage of just leaving that area with the person he trusted, who we were sharecropping with,
right,
is something really haunting about that situation. Because, you know, you got myself as a baby, and my sister was only 2 years old, and we started on a journey, you know, just going further and further away from the property. We were closer in the first beginning, when the place that mom died, but we just went further and further away in Madison County there.
How many times do you think you moved?
As I knew, when I was able to figure it out, as a maybe a 6-year-old, I knew at least 4 times. And my brother's older siblings probably can tell you it was at least 5 or 6 or more.
So after granddad had died, like, so you guys, you talked about moving. So was this after he passed? This is when all you guys were kind of like on the run after that too, like after he passed?
Well, after father passed, the older siblings were grown and they were men at that point. Mm-hmm. Me and my sister Brenda, and we were the youngest, and the oldest ones were taking care of the youngest one. We kind of separated a little bit, and one of the oldest brothers took me in, and the oldest brother kept the other two, which was the youngest of the siblings other than myself and Brenda, the youngest girl.
Okay.
And you were, you know, at some point, like, had you guys settled down in a place so that, were you guys going to school? I mean, I would imagine you were, you know, quite young when he passed away still, though.
Yeah, we settled there where my father passed at, and went to school a few years. And we all kind of left that area because there was no reason to be there anymore, you know.
Sure.
Sharecropping no more with the farmer. We decided we were going to move to the city, and we did.
Okay.
So, talking about the well and the land, so the obviously going back to the beginning of it all, so who originally told you about the land? How did y'all find out about it to begin with?
Well, that was the grace of God that happened, because we were mainly riding our sister around town there, and we were headed 72 West, and that's where the property is located. And as we passed that area, going into Madison, our sister, which is our stepsister, and she said something really weird. She said, "What did your father do with that property? That was heir property." And we kind of looked at one another as, "What do you mean?" heir of property. So she said, yeah, your daddy was heir of that property from his ancestors. And we didn't have a clue what she was talking about. But as soon as that evening ended, we went on a treasure hunt to find out what she was talking about. And what I mean treasure hunt, we went to the Madison County Courthouse and started our research. And that was in the early 90s.
Were all of you together when she, like you guys were all in the car together? Was it just a few of you?
Three of the young men and myself and my other two siblings.
Okay.
Besides our sister, but she was in Chicago.
Okay. How did that conversation go? Did you call and let her know, hey, we...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We called her right away and told her we were on a research expedition down here to see what's going on. And she was very delighted to know that we had inheritance we didn't even know about. Right. She was kind of, you know, excited about it being way in Chicago. So,
sure.
Yeah, we explained it to her and that everything we done, you know, we kind of like elaborated to her what we found back and forth from the telephone.
What were some of the first pieces of research that you found? Like you went to the courthouse. So what were the first, you know, kind of things, pieces of the puzzles that you found?
The first thing we found was the deed where this man, they call him W.L. Sanderson, had forged our parents' signature. Okay. That was one of the first things we found. And we wanted to know, actually, where did our father get the property? So we kept going back years after years after years until we got back to 1870, and the property was coming forward from that point. And we researched the Census Bureau to see where our ancestors live, and it's the same property in the courthouse now from 100 years ago, or over 100 years ago, because the slave which came here with the enslaver, she was emancipated in 1820. So they were there on the property when the enslaver died. And when the Reconstruction era came about, they start buying land.
Right.
So go ahead.
So the property dated back over 100 years.
So when you guys started doing your research, like, were there any, like, I guess, things that were trying to get in your way? For trying to stop you guys from doing research, trying to find out different, like how far back does this go? How much land is it? Where did you guys notice resistance in your research?
Well, yeah, we had things that roadblocks that were, you go to the page and the page tells you the number of where the article is and it wasn't there. So we had to ask the people in the record department, where is this article or where is this document? And most of them was kept in a unsecure place, which we didn't understand. It was in the probate office, but it should have been in the places that we saw it from the book.
Right. So the things that you guys were researching, and it was like, yeah, just go here to take a look at it. And it was almost like it was removed and put somewhere else.
Right. Correct.
Okay. And so you you guys, when you had that resistance in, say, the research, was there, because obviously eventually you started looking for either representation or trying to ask questions. So like diving a little bit deeper into the resistance, was there any more of that? I get when I say like physical resistance, it's more like, hey, people telling you nope, the
Whitey wanted or
want this, where they inquire who are you guys? Why are you wanting to do this?
Well, the resistance we came was, you know, what are you looking for? You know, you're in a public setting, and why are you looking for this? And why don't y'all have a lawyer to do this for you? Mm-hmm. Those type of things were put at us. And at one point, we got smarter. We talked to a researcher, and we wanted to hire him, you know. And he accepted, and one day he told us he can't do this research because the research was kind of putting his father in a situation where his father was like a condemning authority with the Madison County and City of Huntsville process. So he told us he couldn't do the research. So, and he was one of the prominent researchers around Madison County there. So that was a roadblock.
So that was his job to do research.
Absolutely.
But as soon as you guys told him what it was, it was all of a sudden, hey, you know, I can't.
He was going to get his dad in trouble is basically what that sounds like.
Correct.
Okay.
Conflict of interest.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's funny how that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's really because it's such a big area, but then it becomes this tiny little town, and all of a sudden people know everybody, and everybody you need that could help you can't because of conflict of interest.
Right.
So that becomes its own struggle. What year about would you say that you learned? You know, was this the early 90s? Was this the late 80s? What time frame was it that you even learned that there was a property and that you guys started looking?
Late 90s.
Late 90s.
Late 90s.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So did you guys ever have a, now before you heard about it, so you guys never heard anything about the land, obviously, but after you started looking around, was there other people in the community that remember Granddad actually having the land,
other
people that knew you guys coming up, and was like, yeah, we knew all about it.
So we talked to some older people that may have been the same age my dad and lived pretty close to him, and they were all, when we came to them, they were glad to see us, but the wives of those men wouldn't let them talk. Hmm. One lady. The guy opened the door. It's one of my dad's friends, and he was smiling and he was glad to see us. And we asked him about the property, and he asked, "Have we talked to this lady that was in the neighborhood when the condemnation was going on?" And he said, "Y'all need to go talk to her." And then his wife interrupted and told him. He doesn't know anything. Leave him alone. And they shut the door in our face.
Wow.
Yes.
Now, did that happen a few times? Obviously, not that incident itself, but did that happen that you guys noticed the more you started doing research, the more people was like, hey, you shouldn't be asking about this type of stuff or leave us alone?
Yeah, a lot of my own relatives that were pretty close to my dad, and they were trying, they were like step sisters. They didn't want to talk about it. So it was a lot of things that they knew that they could have told us. And this situation could have been better handled. But even some of dad's closest relatives would not talk to us. And we had relatives that had moved to Detroit. And the only time we saw the brother, which was in Detroit, was at our dad's funeral. And we didn't know him from the man in the moon, but he told us who he was. And after the funeral, we never saw him again until we found out he died in 81. Hmm. He never came back to Madison County to live. He stayed in the Detroit area.
So it seemed like a lot of people was like, hey, we want you to get, you know, find out what happened. We just don't want no part in helping you.
Correct.
Is what it seems.
Well, and I personally, because I've seen the condemnation court documents and from July of 62. And I just want to know when you saw that for the first time, what, and you read it, do you remember, you know, what was going through your head or how it made you feel to see those proceedings, to see the court just overlook everybody that was there and to see that what their intention with the property was?
Well, I mean, to we lived it, like you said. We went through all those papers, my brother and I, and to see the way that our family was steamrolled over in the court hearings, and to see the people that our dad trusted said they had a interest in the property, but no paperwork. To see people getting paid from the property just by saying, I planted a garden here every year for 2 years. To see a deed exclude my father out of a small percentage of our property that he belonged to. Now, that's not including the 10 acres that he was inherited to himself and his siblings, which is us. To see how the meeting went when they were asking the people, do y'all understand why we are taking your property? It was like maybe lasted maybe 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Then we saw that was cool.
And to hear them say things to brush off some people that said a few things. To brush them off and tell them that's a different type of condemning.
Yeah.
To me, it was racist, and it was systematically done because of the city government doing it. And for them to call in some of the documents, our father, the three Negro tracks, and they were not calling the white landowners Caucasians, but they didn't call my dad by his name. They just said three Negro tracks. So to see all of that was it was hurting. Yes, sure. I mean it was so horrible the way they took this property, because they could have done better.
Absolutely.
Most definitely. Mm-hmm. I want to ask another quick question about the deed. You know, when you saw the deed and you said that wasn't your parents' signature, what made you, was it a gut feeling, or did you guys just get together and say, no, we're sending this off? When did you know you were sending it off to someone that could analyze it?
I mean, you could see the writing. It was obvious that if you're doing research and that you've done all this research and been into all type of chambers to look at this and that, and mindset, you want to know everything. So it just, we elaborate and say, hey, look, let's get this handwriting tested. Let's get it analyzed. So our mindset told us, no, something ain't right about this handwriting. And we all agreed. So we dug deep and we put our brains together to try to figure out who would we get to do this analysis. And we searched and we found this lady out of Nashville. So she told us what we needed to do and what we needed to send to her, and we sent it. And she sent us back papers, stack of papers, and her credentials and what all she does and how she analyzed those type of signatures and told us point blank that this is absolutely fraud.
Right. And so I think the biggest thing about that piece of evidence is when you all have taken your concerns to people, to UAH, and most recently to the city council, that was one of the biggest pieces of evidence that you all had, was like, hey, we can prove that, you know, this wasn't even his handwriting. Because obviously in the newspaper coming back where UAH, a representative speaks to the local newspaper and the local news, that's one of their biggest things is when they say, no, we got this land.
We have evidence of a deed
that was signed, and granddad couldn't read or write. So it was like, how was it signed by who? And when you have that type of evidence saying by someone who studies handwriting, is like saying, no, this was forged. So immediately, when you talk about eminent domain, right, that's legal for them to do. It's not that it's illegal for them to do eminent domain.
But how they do it.
How they do it.
is the difference.
Is the difference.
And go ahead.
Absolutely. I mean, the Fifth Amendment says in the Constitution, if you're going to do eminent domain, you have to award the landowners just compensation,
right?
And to see what they didn't do, and it was no compensation to the heirs of my father or to himself. Mm-hmm. It was only to the people, the sisters and brothers of him, that what they were calling heir property was 2 1/3. But there was 10 acres and a well that belonged to my father, but he was also the administrator over the 2 1/3.
Now, you have anything?
I was going to ask, what do you feel was your biggest struggle in getting, was there a lull? Like, was there a stopping point where you just knew there was no more evidence that you could find, or that people were not releasing the correct things that you wanted to see, or not, you know, not correct, but just more of what you needed?
So never was it a stopping point for me. We compiled so much information about our ancestors that it's enough to write a book. Right now, we could go to a publishing company and write a book about our ancestors that came before us.
Sure.
So there was never enough stuff that we could not find. Mm-hmm. We found things in places that the ordinary person didn't know about. And what I mean by that is it's called the vault. And it's a place in the Madison County Courthouse where they keep the long assessments book. They're about 20 pounds, and they're about as long as a dining room table almost. And those areas tells the history of the landowners. And when we saw all of that, I mean, it's right there to see, public knowledge. But if you didn't know about it, you nobody never went down there.
Sure. It was definitely, everything seemed to be hidden right in the open.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So they can have that excuse, we didn't hide anything.
Yeah.
So moving on a little bit. So UAH, the interaction that you all have had with them, I mean, has there been actually any interaction between a representative from UAH and you all, any of you all, anybody in the family at all, or are they trying to have a talk whatsoever?
Well, we send them plenty of emails, trying to sit down and talk with them. They decline, and they want to refer us to documents at the Madison County Courthouse. We did sit down with the historical officials over there, and in the beginning, they wanted to talk to us about a plaque for our ancestors. They told us about our ancestors, which we already knew. They showed us a film about where the blacksmith shops were at, and that the water source was coming from. And they were kind of cordial, but when they found out that we were doing something different with Where's My Land, the advocacy group, they kind of snubbed us to say that they don't want to talk to us, refer to the documents.
Okay. So what about those in the community? So like that you guys have had, obviously you guys have marched, orchestrated a march down on UAH. And so there was clearly talks in the community after that march. You guys still are having a commanding presence in the local area of Huntsville. Has anybody from the community since then, like the marches you guys had, have they come forth with any more like help or assistance, or are they at least just letting you know that they're in support of you guys?
Yes, we talked to some of the lawmakers, Representative Daniels, and he had advised us that if he wasn't in Washington that March, that he would have been there for us. But unfortunately, he was there trying to get laws passed, and he would send a representative over to the march, but we never saw that representative. But of course, all the lawmakers in Montgomery have heard of our family, and they knew of this march. Mm. So, but whether or not they're willing to make laws for this eminent domain that has been taking people land for generations, they hadn't came and said it yet.